Welcome to Heritage, a series of programmes that looks at the heritage of St Albans. I'm Tim Boson, and I'm in the Lady Chapel of St Albans Cathedral today. My guest is Stephen De Silva. Hello, Stephen. Thanks so much for agreeing to this interview.
Oh, it's very nice to be here. Thank you for coming to the cathedral to conduct it.
Can you tell me a bit about yourself and how you are involved with the cathedral and how this has influenced your understanding of St Albans heritage?
Well, I moved to St Albans 45 years ago this year. I came to teach, and very early on, within a couple of months, I started attending the cathedral as a member of the parish. And within a couple more months after that, I got roped into being a cathedral guide. So I've been a guide here for all that time. The other day, I think the chairman of the guides worked out that I'm the father of the house. I'm the longest serving active guide here in the cathedral. And it's been the pleasure of my life to guide people around this magnificent building. I had a career in education, in writing, teaching, all of those things. And I guess those skills lend themselves to wanting to tell the story of the cathedral to visitors from far and wide. It's certainly been, as I say, the greatest part of what I've ever done. And perhaps the particular highlight for me was in 2019, when the new Welcome Centre was built and the Shrine of St. Amphibolus was restored and we brought in those beautiful illuminated wall paintings. I got to chair the Interpretation Committee, the committee that oversaw all of the text, all of the projects, all of the filming that brought about the Alban Britain's First Saint project. Telling St Albans' story in a new way, making the rest of Britain, and I hope the world, realise what an important place this is.
I don't think I could have come to speak to a better person about the cathedral. That's super. Stephen, St Albans is known as the first place of Christian martyrdom in Britain. How has its religious history influenced the city's culture and traditions?
Well, I think it'd be fair to say that the city's history would be very different were it not for St Alban and St Alban's Abbey. In a sense, the city of St Alban's develops around the great monastery church that's here. And up till the Reformation, it was very much the centre of city life. And then, of course, after the Reformation, you get a city charter, and the centuries of the citizens of the town or the townspeople wanting their own independence happens in the middle of the 1550s. And the Abbey Church maybe declined slightly in its history, but it's still influential. The town's grammar school, founded in the reign of Edward VI, is here in this chapel that we're actually sitting in. And, of course, in 1877, St Albans can call itself a cathedral city because, of course, the cathedral here, we're raised to that status. And I think today I would still suggest that the fact we're a cathedral city and there is this huge, magnificent medieval building in the centre of it is very much a draw for St Albans' identity. You know, we're a proud and beautiful place. We like being near London, but not London. And I think the cathedral lends itself to the character and personality of the city.
It is a wonderful cathedral. It's said it has the longest aisle in the UK. Is that true?
Yes, the longest nave of any medieval cathedral in England. There's always a dispute about that. Winchester Cathedral like to argue with us about it. And it depends whether you measure on the ceiling or on the floor. Winchester measure on the floor, we measure on the ceiling, and it's longer. And the late Queen always said that was the one key fact she knew about us, and if she believed it, it's true.
It's nice to have a bit of ecclesiastical rivalry over a building. St Albans Cathedral, it's built of Roman bricks, is that right? And are there any other examples of this unique blend of historical periods in the city's architecture?
Well, it is built of Roman bricks. What happened was the Saxon abbots here at St Albans had already started stockpiling the bricks in the early 1000s. And then when the Normans arrived in 1066, very quickly, within 10 years, they start building here. They appoint a Norman abbot, and he has this wonderful supply of Roman bricks ready for him. And so when you look up at the tower of the cathedral, you're looking at Roman bricks used by a Norman abbot to make a real statement about the Normans are here and we're staying, because it is such a large and massive building. But very unusually, as I say, built of brick, I don't think there are many other... I mean, I'm sure there were other buildings in the city that reused bits of Verulamium, but I can't think of any I could walk out and identify today.
That's interesting. I mean, it's very fashionable now in architecture to retrofit. So St. Albans was a leader in retrofitting.
Absolutely. I mean, we are an early recycled building. We want to develop our green credentials. Let's rest them there first in the 1070s, shall we?
The Abbey and the Cathedral are major tourist attractions. How does St. Albans ensure its heritage benefits the local community while at the same time still attracting visitors?
Well, you're right, we do. We're a big pull, aren't we, for visitors to the city. But I think it's really important that we keep our relationship with the city going. I would say it's better now than it's been for many decades. I think that making the building available for all kinds of community groups to use, just a couple of simple examples. A big one is, of course, the University of Hertfordshire, which very much like to conduct their ceremonies here. It's great to be in a historic building, I think, and receive your degree in that way. But also in small ways. I mean, Oaklands College have an art exhibition here every year, a chance to show off their art. And in so many ways, we want to make the building available to local community groups, to use them in different ways. It was wonderful when we had the Peace Doves here earlier in the year. I don't know if people saw that exhibition, but you know, thousands of doves hanging from the ceiling. And under there, we had a local yoga group come in. We had one of the local theatre productions conduct a performance of Romeo and Juliet. It was very much local groups coming and using their cathedral, because that's very much what Dean Joe would always say. Welcome to your cathedral.
That's the Dean Joe Kelly Moore. When I was spoken to her, she's always been very ecumenical, if I might say so. But it's wonderful that the cathedral opens itself up for all these local activities.
It is, and I think that's what it should be. It should be at the heart of a community. After all, it exists because the community bought it. I mean, that's one of the, just to go back into history again, because you can't stop me doing that. Why aren't we a ruin like Bury St. Edmunds? In the centre of Bury St. Edmunds, there is a large ruined monastery. No sign of the monastery itself. But here in St. Albans, what saved the monastery, the building, the church? The town. Townspeople clubbed together, they found £400, and they bought this huge church to be the parish, the central parish of St. Albans. Now, the town saved the building, and I think that relationship has gone on. I think that has made local people see St. Albans Cathedral as theirs, even though they might not actually know the historical reason why.
It's a wonderful cultural investment, in fact.
It really is. It really is. And thank goodness they did it.
Just moving on a bit, how can the stories of Britain's first master, St. Albans, inspire tolerance and understanding in today's society? Because we just do need that, do we not?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about the story of Alban, who is he? He's a high-status citizen of the Roman Empire. He wasn't Roman, he would have been Romano-British, one of the local people who cooperated with the Romans. But he's high-status. He's got a lot resting on who he is. And he takes in a stranger. He actually risks his reputation, his life, which he ends up paying with, to bring in this stranger and bring them in. So I think the story speaks of lots of values and ideas that we would really want to promote. The cathedral chapter has recently gone through a process of identifying some of those ideas, and I thought I just wanted to share them with you in the context of Alban's story. And the first one is the concept of welcome and compassion. The idea that we should be compassionate, we should be open, we should be welcoming to all. So we've been very, very pleased, for example, to have had an asylum seeker group here at the cathedral. Many of our members have helped in English lessons with that group. We were very pleased, and it's an irony and a pleasant one, that Windrush Day, commemorating the arrival of the Empire of Windrush from the Caribbean, that arrived on the 22nd of June, 1947. So, you know, it's a really important part of St. Albans' DNA that it's about being welcoming and compassionate to everyone. The second pair of words were worship and witness. And if you think about it, the Albans story is about the freedom to worship in your own way, or have no belief at all, but the freedom to hold your own beliefs. That's what the priest that Alban saved from death, Alban takes him into his house, cares for him, shelters him. That priest is of a different faith, of a different belief, but Alban is prepared to care for him and to give him the chance of survival. Alban indeed, of course, ends up being such a leader, and that takes us to another one of the key words, leadership and service. Alban becomes the leader of that, I guess, small Christian community. We don't know for sure, do we? But the story suggests there must have been a tiny Christian community here with the priest working in this area. Alban becomes a leader. He's of service to people. And ultimately, he shows courage. He's a courageous man to stand up and do that. And he stands for justice. I think those are key words for us all, and I think words that St. Albans City would be proud of and should be proud of, and certainly we are here at the Cathedral.
It is a very, very compelling story. Well, thanks for that. You mentioned earlier about St. Albans School, and it started in the Cathedral, and it's one of the oldest in the world, is it not? How does the city celebrate its long history of education in relation to the Cathedral?
Well, you're right, yes, the school that was in the Lady Chapel, so one of the reasons, going back to that story about the townspeople buying the building, one of the things they do is found a grammar school in the chapel, but the person who starts the school is a former abbot of the monastery. So in effect, what he's doing is actually continuing the monastic school that was here. So when St. Albans School, quite rightly say, they're one of the country's oldest schools, they're tracing not just back to Edward VI, they're going right back into the monastic period. So it's an ancient and important school. And we've often talked about St. Albans as a place that cherishes learning. And that's both the town and the cathedral. And we welcome so many different schools here in so many different ways. We have a wonderful schools program, as you know, which brings in, I think the latest estimate was about 12,000 young people last year, I think, visiting. It's just wonderful to have so many schools locally coming in. But of course, schools also like to celebrate here. So we have our local church, a C of E school, our secondary school, Townsend, come in regularly every term. Our own parish school, the Abbey Primary School, comes in every week for a service, as does St. Albans School across the road. They use the cathedral as probably the biggest school chapel in England, I would guess. I think the town likes to extend that sense of learning. And of course, there's also two great programs, and that's the Adult Learning Program. Now, I'm talking to somebody who's one of the stars of the Adult Learning Program, Tim, because you've done so many stints with us on history and psychology and culture. And again, that program that we offer the residents of St. Albans and further afield is something that's much more than religion. It is about history, culture, psychology, and it's a fascinating and well-attended area. So I think the relationship between learning and education in St. Albans and at the Cathedral is very strong at the moment.
Absolutely impressive, and thank you for the compliment. Just as a final thought, I'm visiting the cathedral for the first time. What should I look out for?
Oh, what are the five great things to look out for? Two of England's eight medieval shrines. You know, there are only eight of these pedestal shrines left, and we are embarrassed to have two of them, 25% of them. Don't miss those. Don't miss the fabulous collection of wall paintings. Again, one of the best sets of medieval wall paintings. Yeah, they're not pristine, because of course all wall paintings in England suffered a lot in the Reformation, but we've undertaken this wonderful project of re-illuminating four of the largest ones in their original colour. We did that with the British Museum a few years back. So don't miss those wall paintings. Don't miss the huge length of that nave you were talking about. It's impressive in its size. It really is. And last but not least, and this is something some visitors do miss, Stay for a choral evensong at 5 o'clock and sit down and listen to the beautiful music made by the boys and girls who make up our choirs here in the cathedral. I think that's a treat that more people ought to be availing themselves of.
Stephen, that was wonderful. Thank you so much for this interview, and I look forward to my next visit to the cathedral. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was talking to Stephen De Silva, MBE, a volunteer guide at St Albans Cathedral for over 40 years. Can I thank the sponsors of these heritage programmes? St Albans Cathedral, St Albans and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society, City and District of St Albans Tour Guides, and Conservation 50.